The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on June 27, 1987 in Melbourne, Australia. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 2, Text 9.
Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gaurar Haro Siva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Why isn't this kind of everyone, when you say Shri Krishna Chaitanya, no one chant? When you say Hare Krishna, they all chant. Every time they always say Shri Krishna, but they never say at that time. I always say Hare Krishna. Everywhere. But we need to chant Sri Krishna Chaitanya more. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya narangshayeva narottamang devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayamudiyajat mukhakuroti vachalam pangulangayate giring yatkripathamahang bande sri gurum ninatharinam paramanandhamadhamam yatkripathamahang bande paramanandhamadhamam.
Text 9, Chapter 2, Canto 9.
Tam sasapa kulacharya pitagasam akamata na kshatra bandhu sudras twang karmana bhavitamuna tam sasapa kulacharya Pitagasamakamata Nakshatra Bhandu Sudrastvam Karmana Bhavitamuna Tangsasapa Kulacharya Pitagasamakamata Nakshatra Bhandu Sudrastvam Karmana bhavita muna. Tam. Him. Prishadra. Sasapa. Cursed. Kula Acharya. The family priest Vasishta. Krita Agasam. Because of committing the great sin of killing a cow. Akamataha, although he did not want to do it. Na, not. Kshatra Bandhu, the family member of a Kshatriya. Sudra Twam, you have behaved like a Sudra. Karmana, therefore by your fruitive reaction. Bhavita, you shall become a Sudra. Amuna, because of killing the cow. Translation, although Prishadra had committed the sin unknowingly, his family priest Vasishta cursed him, saying, in your next life you shall not be able to become a Kshatriya. Instead you shall take birth as a Sudra because of killing the cow. Translation, although Prishadra had committed the sin unknowingly, His family priest,
Vasishtha,
cursed him, saying, in your next life,
you shall not be able
to become a Kshatriya.
Instead, you shall take birth
as a Sudra
because of killing the cow.
Purport. It appears that Vasishtha was not free from tamo guna, the mode of ignorance. As the family priest or spiritual master of Prishadra, Vasishtha should have taken Prishadra's offense very lightly. But instead, Vasishtha cursed him to become a Sudra. It is the duty of a family priest not to curse a disciple, but to give him relief through the performance of some sort of atonement. Vasishtha, however, did just the opposite. Therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he was durmati. In other words, his intelligence was not very good. And the translation and purport of text 9, chapter 2, canto 9. So we're reading about the sons and the dynasties of the sons of Manu. The Manu known as Sradhadeva got 10 sons, and Ikshvaku was the eldest. Ikshvaku, who is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So, this is another son. And he was following the order of his spiritual master by protecting cows. He'd stand all night with a sword to give the cow protection. Prabhupada said that at that time, even the son of a Kshatriya was protecting the cows. What to speak of, you know, how important it was to stay up the whole night to see that no wild animal would kill them. Well, now we're sending them off to the slaughterhouses in the modern world. And that's such a sinful activity for the human society. So then, once at night, while it was raining, a tiger entered the land of the cowshed. Upon seeing the tiger, all the cows who were lying down got up in fear and scattered here and there on the land. When the very strong tiger seized the cow, the cow screamed in distress and fear, and Prishadra, hearing the screaming, immediately followed the sound. He took up his sword, but because the stars were covered by the clouds, he mistook the cow for the tiger and mistakenly cut off the cow's head with great force. Because the tiger's ear had been cut by the edge of the sword, the tiger was very afraid, and it fled from that place while bleeding on the street. In the morning, when Prishadra, who was quite able to subdue his enemy, saw that he had killed the cow, although at night he thought he had killed the tiger, he was very unhappy. So he unknowingly committed the sin of killing the cow. So Vasishtha cursed him to become a Sudra in his next life. Vasishtha was not a pure Vaishnava. Vasishtha was basically a rishi, or in the Karmakanda. He was very powerful. His curses would not fail ordinarily. In fact, even he became connected with Ramchandra's pastimes as well. Vasishtha Muni was a born Brahmana, and he was very concerned about protecting cows, protecting Brahminical culture. At the same time, he would perform meditation and penances, and it seemed that although he respected the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was not situated as a pure Vaishnava. Between Vasishtha Muni and Vishwamitra Muni, there was a long-standing feud. Vishwamitra was a Kshatriya by birth. But he could realize that the Brahmanas are more powerful due to Brahma Teja, due to their austerities and penances. So he decided that he would like to become a Brahmana. So he did much tapasya and penance so that he could become a Brahmana. So finally he became a Brahmana by his penances. So then he got into some form of argument with Vasishtha Muni. He thought, well, now I'm a Brahmana, so I'm equal with Vasishtha Muni. And he, by his mystic power, he threw something at Vishishta, but Vishishta Muni with his stick, his danda, he caught it and just deflected it. Not ordinary, but by some like mystic power. So then Vishishta said that you may be a Brahmana, but you're the lowest rung of Brahmana. So then Vishishta this way humiliated the Vishvamitra, so he became determined to become more than an ordinary Brahmana, but to become a Rishi, which is a super powerful Brahmana. So he did more penances and austerities to become a Rishi. And after becoming a Rishi, then again he got into some fight with Vishishta, and they end up cursing each other to become ducks somewhere along the way. And so both of them were quacking around and everything. And then, so somehow they got out of that. But maybe that was later. One of the times they cursed each other to be ducks is mentioned in that Bhagavatam. But so it was like an ongoing thing. So actually, as a Rishi, must have been later, because as a Rishi, he still couldn't defeat Vishishta. So then, but he expended all his potency. So then he wanted to become a Maharishi, which is a great Rishi. So then he did more penances and austerities, and finally he came up to the position of being a Maharishi. So then, at that time, there's that famous story, I think I mentioned this before, about how that Harishchandra came to him and requested to go to Indraloka. It's Harishchandra, he went to the Vishvamitra and requested that I want to go to heaven, Indraloka directly. So he had just, you know, finished his penances, he was filled with mystic power. It's like a battery, they charge it up. They get over the certain limit, and then they get so many mystic powers. So then he said, all right, by my mystic power, you go right up to Indraloka. And somehow it gave, even though he just did like a sudra, he was able to transform all the way up to Indraloka, through outer space. Then, you know, here the sudra walks in on the Indra's, you know, court. Indra's got all the apsaras and the gandharvas and the siddhas. All of a sudden, this, you know, the sudra comes walking in, you know. And the Indra says, what? You know, who are you? You know, he says, Vishvamitra, the, you know, great Rishi has sent me here, you know. He says, he looks, you know, immediately says, this guy doesn't have the karma to be up here. He's just a sudra, you know, from the heavenly, from the earthly. He's, get back down, you know. So then Harishchandra is falling through outer space again, coming back to the earth planet. And Vishvamitra says, what's going on? Why is he coming back? Go back! You know, and then Indra saying, and then he's going back up again. And Indra says, oh no, he's coming back. You know, go down. So there was a huge tug of war, you know. Indra's pushing down with his mystic power. Vishvamitra's pushing him up. And he's like dangling in outer space there. He can't get anywhere. So Vishvamitra was getting a little, his mystic power was getting a little bit strained. So he thought, I'm not going to be able to just continue on against Indra. So what to do? So then he got the idea, he made a complete duplicate heavenly planet, Indra Loks, and the whole, you know, the whole Milky Way, it was two of them, you know, all of a sudden, whatever, the heavenly planet. As if, you know, you made a double, something like that. Just a double. So then he put Harishchandra into his new Indraloka. Indra saw that. He said, oh, no, now what? You know, it's like all of a sudden you got another Australia out there. You know, what are the Labour Party going to think? The Liberals take that one. You know, so it's, you know, was a big problem for Indra. Suddenly he's got double planets and he's not in charge of half of them. So This was much more complicated than what he had bargained for. So then they, you know, had a discussion with the other demigods. They said discretion was the better part of valor. He went down and requested Vishvamitra, listen, we'll accept Harishchandra into Indraloka if you kindly wind up the duplicate planet. We got compromise. So then Vishvamitra, he agreed. So then, I mean, that was settled, but afterwards, he was like totally wiped out again. He didn't have any more mystic power. He's like depleted. So again, he started doing tapasya. This time, to again become back up to the full power. But when he was building up his mystic power that Indra could see, that was going to happen again. He said, oh no, this guy gets, you know, full power again. Who knows what he's going to do?
So then he asked
Menaka, one of
the heavenly apsaras, to
if she would kindly go down there and neutralize Vishwamitra. Preoccupy him a little bit with some other activity than meditation. So then she came down, and he was, of course, you know, deep in meditation. He couldn't really see anything.
Was in
samadhi.
But she
had some special ankle belts, which could penetrate
the
layers of
meditation and everything.
So she started walking around in front of him, you know, ching, 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 with the ankle bells ringing,
and, you know,
suddenly this, like, was going through his meditation. He just opened his eyes, and it was all over. So Shakuntala was born from that one, but after that Vishwamitra, he became very dissatisfied with himself, but he became determined, and then he went to Vasishtamuni. Somehow he had some, again, he did more tapasya. He went to Vasishtamuni somehow in there, and he said, the point is that you're only a Maharishi. You have to become a Brahmarishi. You're not a Brahmarishi. I'm a Brahmarishi. So then he became determined to become a Brahmarishi and then become more powerful than all these demigods. So then again, he did a super tapasya. I mean, he, like, you know, like thousands of years and just a. So finally, he was able to satisfy Lord Brahma, who personally came. And by Brahma gives his blessing, he becomes a Brahma Rishi. At that time, he becomes, you know, practically like on the level of being one of the sons of Brahma or something. So very powerful. So then he goes to Vasishtamuni, you know, and he's that time, you know, filled with the Brahma Tej. And so then at that time, Vasishta had already learned a lot somehow, maybe. This was a long time ago. That time he said, don't get puffed up because you're a Brahma Rishi. So, because we Brahma Rishis are not the highest thing there is. He said, what? I've been working all this time. I came from a Kshatriya to a Brahmin to Rishi. Maharishi to Brahma. And I'm not, you know, now there's still something more. So then I said, what's that? And he said, well, much higher than us are the pure Vaishnavas, the pure devotees of the Lord. They're directly... We have the power of Brahma, but they have directly the shelter and unlimited potency of Lord Vishnu behind them. So, you know, never cross a pure Vaishnava, because they have unlimited potency from Lord Vishnu. So, even Vishistha was a Brahmarishi, he eventually could come to understand that the pure Vaishnavas were more exalted even than the greatest demigods. In fact, when Dhruva Maharaj was going back to home, back to Godhead, the demigods were watching him go, and they watch him go by, you know, go right past their planets and just go out of sight, beyond what they could,
the limit they could go.
That even the great demigods, they cannot understand the limit of a Vaishnava. So to be a Vaishnava is the greatest position. It's the greatest attainment that there possibly is.
It's not
a small thing. What Lord Chaitanya is giving us
by
making it possible for us to eventually
become a
Vaishnava, a
pure Vaishnava, is inconceivable.
Even great munis, rishis, what they would perform thousands of years of penance and austerity,
they could not
aspire to be at that level of being a pure Vaishnava. Of course, just because we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare,
we should not immediately think that already I'm a completely pure Vaishnava. But we should
consider how great a position that is. We are actually aspiring to be a Vaishnava. Even Srila Prabhupada, in humility, he would say that I'm aspiring to be a Vaishnava.
Actually, to be a Vaishnava
is the great. Of course,
he was a pure
Vaishnava, but that is the mood in this world. Even the
pure Vaishnavas,
out of humility, they consider that
it's such a great
position,
it's
such a great attainment
to be a pure
Vaishnava,
but out of humility, they
consider themselves less than a pure Vaishnava, and they aspire
to be one.
Because a pure Vaishnava means someone who's totally surrendered to Krishna,
someone who's totally
accepted by Krishna in every respect, who has developed pure love for Krishna. So, Vishishta, at the beginning of 40 million years ago, back at the time of creation, one of the first
Manus,
he
cursed his disciple
to become a
Sudra
in his next life.
So normally, the guru doesn't
curse his disciple.
See,
Vishishta was
pure Vaishnava,
supposed to
be free
from all
tama and raja
guna. In fact, they're totally transcendental. With the other
tamadas,
sometimes they have a little bit of tama raja
mixed with it.
Otherwise,
how would they get
into all those fights? Like Vishishta and Vishwamitra, Vishwamitra had maybe more sometimes, but between them, they sometimes got into these fights where technically a pure Vaishnava avoids argumentation and unnecessarily fighting, especially over any form of false prestige, but only for the sake of protecting Krishna or other Vaishnavas. Subsequently, Vishishta, in this last Treta Yuga, he was blessed by Lord Ram. I think he even was accepted as like a spiritual master of Ramchandra. So, I don't know if that changed things in the status of Vishishta Muni, but at this present time, this is in the very beginning of the universe, Vishishta Muni is a very old sage. He's very, very well established. So, at that time, he cursed his disciple. Now, the disciple just took it. Actually, the next so many verses don't have any purport, so I might as well read them. Well, they do have a purport. They do have purports. Well, some do, some don't. Basically, what he did is he just accepted the curse with folded hands and he became a brahmachari, which is approved by great sages. Then he just said here that thereafter Prashadra gained relief from all responsibilities, became peaceful in mind, and established control over all his senses, being unaffected by material conditions, being pleased with whatever was available by the grace of the Lord to maintain body and soul together, being equal toward everyone. He gave full attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is the transcendental super soul free from material contamination. Thus, Prashadra, fully satisfied in pure knowledge, always keeping his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achieved pure devotional service to the Lord and began traveling all over the world without affection for material activities, as if he were deaf, dumb, and blind. So, of course, because he achieved pure devotional service, later it will explain how also he achieved the spiritual world, that he took the curse that he was going to become a sudra in the next birth. It was the use of living. It was the use of, we're going to become a sudra in your next birth, there's no hope. So then he just put all of his attention on Krishna. Actually, that's what the devotees in this age of Kali should consider, that to be born in material life in Kali Yuga, there's no hope. The next birth, no matter what birth you get on this planet, is it going to be a kind of a hopeless situation unless you're born as a devotee? Because look at the whole situation in Kali Yuga. Unless you're a devotee, there's no hope at all for nothing but sudras and lower than sudras in the world. So the situation for Prashadra, he could see that, well, if you're going to be a sudra, you're not going to have any culture. Then where's the hope? So he just completely fixed his mind in Krishna consciousness. And as such, he became totally detached from the world. He became totally attached to Krishna. He became a pure devotee. So indirectly, Vishishta's curse, because possibly Krishna, it was given, without the proper, it wasn't the proper curse to give for someone who'd made an accident. But by Krishna's mercy, Prashadra, because he was actually faultless, by that curse, he was able to become a pure devotee, and then there was no question of taking the next birth as a sutra, because there was no next birth. He was already liberated even while living. And when he died, he went back to Godhead. By Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that the Vaishnava never dies as long as they're in sound. The living, they spread the glories of the holy name around, and when they die to live. Go back to the spiritual world. So, the Vaishnava, they're transcendental even to the curse of a Brahmana. Just like one time Lord Chaitanya, he was cursed by some Brahmana. He was cursed. I forget what the curse was. And he accepted that curse, just like, what was it? Narada Muni was cursed, I think. Lord, someone cursed Lord Chaitanya that he'll never enjoy material happiness. And so Lord Chaitanya became very happy. That was the last thing he wanted to enjoy, was material happiness. So that the Vaishnavas, they actually are transcendental, so there's nothing that anyone can do, because nobody can cut the relationship between a Vaishnava and Krishna. You know, whether they cut off your head or whatever they do, there's nothing that can cut the relationship of a Vaishnava to Krishna. Once you take initiation, once you surrender to Krishna, once you're connected with Krishna in the cyclic succession, once you're fixed with Krishna as a devotee, there's nothing material that can stand in the way. Of course, if a person himself is careless, if he's offensive, if he commits a 10 offenses to the holy name, blasphemes Vaishnavas, or commits other, disobeys the order of the Guru, or does other offenses, that's another thing. That can definitely delay our returning back to Krishna, our development of devotional service. That can even withdraw the shelter of Krishna, depending on how severe and compounded the various offenses are. But materially, there's nothing to fear. Bhajahure manna Sri Nanda Nandana Abhoya Charanara Vindare. Bhajahure, please, my mind, worship the lotus feet of Sri Nanda Nandana Krishna. Abhoya Charanara Vindare, because by worshipping the lotus, his lotus feet, one becomes totally fearless. You read the history of Prashadra, how he's even cursed. But he overcame that by simply engaging in pure devotional service. He could go back to home, back to Godhead. He could develop purely. So although it's a kind of a curse to be born in the Kali Yuga, there's so many defects. Kalo dosha nidhi rajan. Kali Yuga is a dosha nidhi. It's a ocean of defects. So many defects are here. You can just enumerate one after every day. Open any paper, any 6 o'clock news. It's filled with defects. Filled with violence, with murder, with rape, with robbery, with arson, with any number of problems. Ocean of problems. But in spite of all this ocean of problems, there's one great good quality. Hasti haka mahan guna. One great quality. Mahan guna. That counteracts and outweighs all of the defects that there exist in the entire Kali Yuga. Kirtanadeva Krishnasya. Chanting of Krishna Kirtan. Chanting the holy name of Krishna congregationally with the devotees. This is so glorifying Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna. This is so auspicious. This is so powerful. This is so merciful that it alone counteracts all of the problems that we have to face in the Kali Yuga. Kirtanadi for Krishnasya Mukta Sangha, because it liberates one from the contamination and the association of the three modes of nature. The Guna Sangha and Mukta Sangha. Either we are associated with the modes of nature or we're liberated from that association. Mukta Sangha Parang Bhajet. Liberated from the association of the three modes of material nature, and if we stick it out till we leave the body, faithfully chanting Hare Krishna and following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, Parang Bhajet, we go back to home, back to Godhead, back to the spiritual position. Even if we take birth again, for some reason, it would not be separated from Lord Chaitanya. Someone might pray that I want to continue to be in the Sankirtan or wherever you place me. But then one is born as a Nitya Siddha, born as already they are liberated, then they take birth already liberated consciousness. Sometimes even a liberated soul comes down to preach Krishna consciousness. But then they're not considered conditioned. Their situation is, it's of course, like austerity for them, but out of their compassion, sometimes they do that. So, these are really good examples, which are given here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how Krishna protects his devotees. Sometimes a devotee, because of being a devotee, has to face some difficulty. But if one remains faithful to the path of devotional service, then Krishna, he always protects. Just as today we're going to be observing the Jagannath Rath Yatra. Of course, there's the history how Indra Dumna, one of his descendants. This is a story the Pandas tell in Jagannath Puri, that long, many thousands of years before, or a long time ago rather, that the king of Jagannath Puri was going to be married to the daughter of another king. But then the other king had sent a spy to just check up on this king, what's what with him. So they went and they saw the king of Jagannath Puri during the Rath Yatra ceremony. Once a year, he rides on his horses and elephants and everything, and he goes to the chariot of Lord Jagannath, and he sweeps the road in front of Lord Jagannath with a golden broom. Now this is considered ordinarily to sweep the street is the job of a sudra or lower than a sudra. But of course, the king of Jagannath Puri, Indra Dumna, he was doing this as a service for Jagannath. But before God, whether you're a king or whatever you are, you're a servant. Actually, this is the highest consideration of devotional service. But this spy, he said, oh, look at this guy just sweeping out in the street. What kind of king is he? He's a street sweeper. So he went back and reported, don't marry your daughter to this king because he sweeps the streets. He sweeps the streets. I will not marry my daughter to a street sweeper. You know. He sent a message back, you know. So then that king, Indra Dumna, he took it as a great offense that the matter of honor of Jagannath, that if you sweep the road in front of Jagannath, that doesn't contaminate one. That's how every king should come and sweep the road in front of Krishna. That'll purify them. Actually, this year in Bangalore, We had a Rath Yatra festival. At that time, the ex-vice president of India, G.B.D. Jati, he was invited to inaugurate the festival. So he gave some discussion, and he's a little humanistic in his approach, needless to say. Anyway, we addressed his various points and tried to Krishna consciousize them for the public. But after all the discussions were over, the person who was announcing, the president of the temple, he gave a whole speech how King Pratap, Rudra, and other great kings in the history of Orissa, they would go and sweep the road in front of Lord Jagannath. So since the vice president of India was present, they requested him to kindly come and sweep the road in front of Lord Jagannath. He said, "No, I refuse." And everybody was shocked, you know, what is this guy, you know, like all the newspapers, you know. He said that, "We are Democrats. We believe in the parliamentary system of government, democracy. We don't follow any king. Whatever a king did, we'll never follow." You know, all the newspaper guys are writing, you know. So then it was the whole thing, what to do, you know. When he was presenting, I thought, you know, I could have presented, because he's already saying, you know, it's very humanistic. So then I said, well, now that it's democracy, it's government for the people, by the people, of the people, you know. So everyone's a king. Everyone's a ruler. So now we request all the people to sweep the road in front of Jagannath, including the vice president. So then he said, well, if you, then I can do it. So he came there, he gave him the broom, and he just like took it for like, I never saw anyone sweep faster. It was like maybe a half a second, and he handed it back, just like one sweep, and then he gave the broom back. He offered an arti to Jagannath. I guess he really didn't like to sweep, but so we all swept, and all life members and all the other people, even the news, everybody got into a whole sweeping. It was a big thing. So we had the Rath Yatra. Next day in the headlines it came, Vice President India refuses to sweep the road in front of Krishna. It was in the headlines. I don't know if it come to another function. I mean, it wasn't, I mean, it was his own. He, you know, put his own foot in his mouth. But, so this King Indradumna, he declared war against the other king, went out with his whole army, but he was really concerned, you know, that this other is a very powerful king. Well, I'm going to be victorious or not. And they're going in procession. Meanwhile, up ahead, there was an old lady carrying some yogurt to the market. And she was a devotee. She was chanting Hare Krishna. She was carrying some yogurt to the market. And then she saw the two young princes riding up. They stopped her and they said, "What do you have there?" "We have some yogurt." She said, "Well, can I have the... give it to us. We want it. We're hungry." "So how will I get paid?" Said, "King Indradumna is coming behind. He'll pay you." "So how will you know? How will he know that that you ate the yogurt?" So he said, "Here, you just take my ring, you show it to him. He'll pay you." So it's a valuable gold ring, you know, sorry. Gave him the yogurt. And then those two princes drove off, and then they rode off on their horses. So then after some time, the whole army comes by, and the king and Dudum, everyone. And then there's this lady, "I want to see the king, you know." So, you know, it wasn't so easy, you know. But the king sees some of those ladies, "No, no, you know, I want my yogurt money." So the king hears, what's going on, you know, bring her over, what's the matter, you know. And she said, "Listen, two of your princes came, and they took yogurt from me, and they said that when you came, you would pay me. And they gave me their ring to show you." He said, "None of my princes went ahead. None of my generals went ahead. What is that? Let me see that ring, you know." He said, "Where did you get this ring?"
This is the ring of Lord Jagannath! What did those two princes look like?
So one was black on a white horse, and the other was white on a one was black on a white horse, the other was very light color white on a black horse, and they were very young. He had a peacock feather in his hair. And
that was Lord Jagannath! And the whole army, conches blowing and drums.
So, of course, they were victorious, and everything got married to the daughter and princess, and everything was happy forever after in devotional service to Krishna. So, Krishna, he helps his devotee, Lord Jagannath helps. If they remain determined, they have that very strong desire to always engage in devotional service without any deviation. So we should never consider any circumstance, no matter how great a trial it may seem, as anything more than an opportunity for us to become more determined, more fixed, more established in that desire of becoming pure Krishna conscious. Krishna promises that his devotee will not perish. If we remain devotees, he'll never let us perish. So we have to have that determination that I will be a devotee forever. I am a devotee, and a devotee means a devotee is a devotee eternally.
Hare Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Haro Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Time for questions? Any questions? Yes, Maharaji? Physical pain in the heart, palpitations. Well, it's not that a devotee is. One may feel emotions. It's not that we're not people, we don't have any more emotions, or that we don't feel things. When Draupadi lost her five sons, killed in their sleep by Aswatthama, you don't think she was upset? You don't think she cried? You don't think she was horrified by the heinous act, the loss of her sons? But did she stop being a devotee? After the initial emotional trauma that she experienced, you know, while she what had just made her just become more determined to be Krishna conscious, that in this world there's nothing that you can depend upon, there's nothing that is more dear than Krishna. Even she later, she saw Krishna, she said, whatever happened, actually I simply, you're my greatest love, you're my greatest shelter, you're my only shelter. Not my husband's, not my children, not anyone. I'm doing all this as simply my duty. But you're my eternal Lord, you're everything for me. So the devotee, they may be the perfect husband, the perfect wife, the perfect son, the perfect whatever. It's like a role they're playing. But actually down, when you get right down to the grass root, right down to the basic, what are they? They're simply sold out to Krishna. They're doing everything as a matter of duty for Krishna. And when there's any kind of conflict, they always pick Krishna. There's never actually any conflict for the devotee. No conflict of interest. But being soft-hearted people, when you even see someone suffering, a devotee feels a para dukkha dukkhi. They feel even sadness to see another suffer. What to speak? Something may happen. They see something. Naturally, they may feel for it. It's not that the devotee is like a cold, harsh. They're not. They're actually very soft-hearted. That's why Arjuna was so compassionate to see how the whole Kurus were fighting each other for what. You see, but of course, he lost a little bit of his perspective. So Krishna gave him back the transcendental vision, and then he was rightly situated. Still, he was feeling foolish that these people are fighting, but all right, it's my duty to serve Krishna. As it's Krishna's service, I'll fight. Even though it's foolish for them, but as I'm doing it not out of foolishness, not out of anger, not out of envy, but out of devotional service. The fact that someone feels strongly about something and still surrenders to Krishna, that endears one more to Krishna. Papa never denied our emotions or denied our, when someone had the baby there, and Prabhupada said, why do you take care of your baby? And now he said, well, start giving all long kind of long blown things. And Prabhupada said, no, because you love your baby. You love your child. That's natural. You should love your child. Because you love your child, you want to give your child the best thing, Krishna consciousness. It's natural that someone will feel, we have feelings. Devotees, that's why devotees are perfect people. They're very human. They're more human than human beings. Krishna is, human beings are only a reflection of Krishna. Krishna is the perfect person. And the Vaishnavas, they become the perfect persons because they are totally connected with Krishna. That's why it's so difficult to be a Vaishnava. But when there is a conflict of interest between Krishna and something else, the devotee always takes Krishna. That's the test. Even if it hurts, they take Krishna. Any other question? Yes? What's your name? Well, it's like boy sees girl, girl sees boy, attachment is there, affection develops, before they know it they get married, and they say, well, we went to it too quick. Or better take it slow. It's already too late. You should have thought about that before. we tell folk members, Namhat members, Bhaktas, take it carefully. Don't make any sudden decision. Make a decision with due consideration. Before moving in the temple, we tell people what it means, what it is. Don't just say, But it's not, I want to, they want to do it. Then once they do it, once they make the commitment, once they take the step forward, actually it's not just like a fast cycle of the washing machine. They're taking, they're taking maybe an extra load of devotional service. It's somehow, it's actually to their credit that they've taken that. So when they've done it, they should try to fulfill the obligation they've done. And somehow, in trying and trying again to fulfill it, if somehow they just fall down or they can't do it, then of course, in consultation with Guru or with senior Vaishnavas, then they should take the most responsible alternative that they are able to maintain at that time. But not just whimsically, I took it too quick. I should just, I stopped eating meat whimsically too quick. Maybe I should just go back and start gradually. Red meat, white meat, fish, and obviously we don't do things like that. But just like say someone may have taken sannyas. In the past, people took sannyas without really considering, without preparing, without realizing that what a great kind of austerity it is, that and a total change of mentality and everything. So then subsequently they found that they were not able to maintain that vow. So then Prabhupada said, all right, if that's the case, and you find that you're not going to be able to remain in Krishna consciousness, maintain your sannyas vows, then if you can be peaceful by having sex life, then get married and have regulated sex life and be a devotee, render devotional service. Don't give up devotional service. Be responsible. Be married, have Krishna conscious sex life. Some people say sex is sex. That is the most uncivilized statement that I've ever heard in my life. It's not at all supported by the Shastra. Krishna, he said that I am sex life, which is not against religious principles. And somebody thinks that sex is sex. Krishna doesn't accept that. Sex, which is according to religious principles, is considered karma-free. It is considered to be authorized. And then eating is eating. Then why not eat meat? If there's a difference between eating meat and eating vegetarian food, then there's a difference between illicit sex and licit sex. There is a difference. Eating is not eating. There's various types of eating, and there's various types of sex. And licit sex, responsible sex, that is bona fide. You do that and remain in Krishna consciousness, you can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. The other type of sex will delay you from going back to Godhead. So the point is like that. There may be many tests, but if someone goes ahead and takes a little additional weight, well, it's like someone, you skip him ahead a few grades in class. It's difficult. He's behind everyone else then. They already went through it for 2-3 years. I was skipped ahead in my primary school a couple of grades. So I graduated from high school when I was 14. But that was, you know, so I was behind. I never learned handwriting very well. I had to print because that was third grade and fourth grade. You learn handwriting. I didn't learn it. But then you get to graduate early too. So you kind of just try and catch up, and then you get the advantage. So if somehow someone did surrender more, did take a little ahead, they should try it. That's to their advantage. If they can somehow stick it out, if they can take shelter from other Vaishnavas, from the Guru, from the deities, and somehow just pray to the previous Acharyas that somehow maybe I wasn't ready, but I did it, so now that I've stepped forward, please help me. And if they can go ahead, well, that's to their credit. They can go back to Krishna faster. But even after all good attempts of trying, not just that, well, it's too difficult and cop out before you even, you know, but if after really trying and then they just see that, you know, I'm falling on my face, I really can't do it. Then talking with other Vaishnavas, and they also say, no, you're sincerely trying, but you're not able to do it. All right, then they give some remedial or suggestion. That's what Vishishta should have done, given a remedial suggestion. You kill the cow by accident, you do this, you get rid of the sin. You know, that's a karmic example. This is a devotional example. Then we take the best alternative that we can. All right, you can't maintain sannyas? All right, then be a responsible vihasta. You can't maintain this situation? All right, what's the best situation you could do? We try to do that. You know, not that we go from all to nothing. Not that we break a codicil by accident, so then that way we have a big, you know, rice feast or something. You still follow a kadas even though you break it. Then again, 2 days later, then you follow it again on Trayodasi. The point is that if we're not able to maintain, we discuss and we see, all right, what is the best alternative? Sometimes you find devotees, they use certain like slogans that, oh, I went in too fast. And then you find, so then the next thing you see is they're completely in sense gratification. How is that? How is that, you know, maybe they went in too fast. They've taken vows, they've taken oaths in front of the deity, in front of the guru, in front of Krishna, in front of the entire disciplic succession, in front of the 10 directions and all the devotees, everyone. These things are not forgotten by Krishna. Even you took them too early, now in retrospect, you took them. You're obligated. If you can't do it 100%, then at least try to do 90%. 80% of what you have promised, and then Krishna may, out of his causeless mercy, still deliver you because he sees you're trying. But if a person just says, well, just makes some excuse and then doesn't even try after that, how is it going to be auspicious for him? How is he going to get back to Krishna in this lifetime? How is it fulfilling the obligations he made? No. That civilization, he took a promise, he'd protect the cow. He didn't protect the cow, even if it was an accident. When he was cursed, he didn't think, well, I was an accident, I don't accept this, you know, hell with the guru or something like that. He just accepted it. And then so what he did is, since I made a mistake and I got cursed and I didn't have, you know, it was a total accident, then he just said, what's the use of this world? I'm going to totally get fixed in Krishna consciousness. He became Krishna consciousness and went back to Godhead. So in other words, even if you take more than you could chew, that may be also an opportunity to surrender. That's somehow Krishna's mercy. Sometimes people, they do that, but that's also the mercy of Krishna. Sometimes people would never have surrendered if they knew what it was all about. But by, at a certain stage, if they had known they would have to go on through that test, they might not have surrendered. But so somehow by Krishna's mercy, they did surrender. Then when they go through that test, then they think, wow, it was actually Prabhupada's mercy. It was Krishna's mercy. Because now I'm able to taste nectar of Krishna consciousness. So you have to take it. Somehow by Krishna's mercy, even though we weren't ready, somehow I was enthusiastic. I took this initiative. Now I'm finding myself a little weak. I should see first how I can build up my strength. And if I can't build it up strong enough, then I should consult and see what I can do, which would still earn me Krishna's mercy and not separate me from their lotus feet. What do you think? Hare Krishna.